Welcome to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
And we're back with another episode of the Pop Culture Cosmos. It's Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here from Pop Culture Cosmos. Inside Sports, Tennessee Football, Game Source, and the Lakers Fast Break. We truly appreciate you checking out all of our great shows. And if you can, please give us that 5-star review. 5-star review. I wish you can give us a 6-star review, but 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Plus, if you could like, share, subscribe. Subscribe today and follow us today on Facebook. Subscribe on YouTube to get the latest notifications on when we go live on the air with the latest Pop Culture Cosmos, PCC Multiverse, State of Pro Wrestling, great interviews for you, and more right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. But it wouldn't be a Pop Culture Cosmos without my good friend, indeed, my fellow amigo in crime. He is the mastermind behind the Happy Hoarder at happyhoardercollectibles.com, plus Happy Hoarder, the Happy Hoarder, everywhere on social media as a good friend, indeed. It is, of course, the man, the myth, the legend himself. It is Josh Peterson. What's up, man?
Well, I am the happiest hoarder of them all. I have a confession to make right now in front of everyone listening or watching. I did sit down last night and I watched the Gran Turismo movie on Netflix, and yeah. I liked it.
Okay.
I know.
Somebody wishes more of you were around.
I know. I don't think that it was. I don't know, it could have been better. Like, it definitely wasn't up to the standards of, like, Ford versus Ferrari, or was the Ferrari movie that came out with Adam Driver. It definitely wasn't that, but I think it told a pretty good story. And maybe just because, like, I coach esports and, like, I'm really into that kind of thing. But I don't know. I enjoyed it. I think it got a lot of, flack that it might not have deserved.
Well, unfortunately, didn't get enough dollars that you felt like it deserved at the box office. But I think once it goes, it's on Netflix, correct? Now? Yeah, it's on Netflix, I believe.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. And I think it's on Amazon Prime. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Well, it'll get the visibility now that it deserves. So hopefully more people will go and appreciate that. As far as WrestleMania talk, Alan, I'm going to go ahead and see if I can schedule something with my good friend, Mr. John Orlando from the PVD cast, my tag team partner on the State of Pro Wrestling, because he wants to follow up on that. So, and sooner than our normal State of Pro Wrestling. So I'll see if I can line up something with him later this week to do just that. Our follow-up on WrestleMania, our follow-up on all the stuff that AEW tried to do, and they're whining and moaning about the WWE and more. So go ahead and check that out when we sit down to go ahead and do just that. But it is a great time indeed. We're talking a lot of pop culture, much to discuss, my friend. You've been doing okay? Everything going okay with the Happy Hoarder?
Yeah, sorry. The girls started streaming something. My internet's going out. Give me.
They're screaming, Happy Hoarder, Happy Hoarder, my friend.
Yeah, hold on.
Well, while you're doing that, I'm going to go ahead and mention that I want to say a special congratulations, because we told you last month in regards to our good friends, Nicole and Doug at Retro City Games, about their departure from Town Square right there on the Las Vegas Strip, Las Vegas Boulevard, just about a mile away from the Mandalay Bay. And unfortunately, they were asked to leave along with several other stores because I guess they're trying to do an image that they don't want a video game store at their location any longer. So they were very disheartened by that because they were paying tenants, good paying tenants. So, okay, you're throwing money away. Fine. They'll just go bring their great video game experience that you can get in all of Las Vegas. They're just going to go ahead and bring it one block away from their old location at the outlet stores, the locations as far as Las Vegas Outlet South on Las Vegas Boulevard, just a block away from where they were at before. So congratulations to them. They were warmly embraced by those management there. So go ahead when they open up that location. They're open, of course, at their Henderson location, but congratulations to Doug and Nicole. And they've talked about opening up a third store on the west side as well.
You know what's crazy is that I remember when we went to the old Henderson location, we're doing, you know, our little live events out there, and Doug had so much inventory in that store. Like, it surprised me that he didn't have a second location, but to think he's getting ready to open a third, like, oh man, like that's awesome. I'm glad to see glad to see things going all right for him. He does a great job. Like, if you guys ever get a chance, like, definitely if you're out in the Vegas area, you just are passing through, definitely stop by the Retro City Games, any of them, because the store is laid out so well, like all of them. And he, you know, you go to a lot of mom and pop game shops out here, and it's just like giant racks because they're so confined with space, and everything just seems like a, you know, somebody's garage or private collection. So it doesn't look that great. But, you know, Doug always does a good job of setting up his shops.
That's out on the floor. I will say, though, you know, the store that they're going to have, they did have on Las Vegas Boulevard, that they will have again here in just a short period of time. They always laid that out nice because they know a lot of eyes from all around the world were coming in to see it. The Henderson store is their volume location. You go behind the counter and they have tons and tons of inventory as far as return, you know, people returning their stuff, sending in their stuff, trading in their stuff. So there's just so much to process. But once you get out on the floor, Josh, it's all organized. It's all neat. It's all behind cases. It's all out on the racks neat. Everything is detailed, like you said, once you get out on the floor and cover it at both their Henderson and it's soon at Las Vegas Outlet South. So I'm looking forward to that, my friend.
Yeah, definitely. So congrats to Doug. We're proud of you, man.
We are proud of you, and you can give sorry to say this, middle finger to Town Square on the way out. Absolutely. Well deserved, by the way, as you know, just can't believe it. Again, we talked about the stigma. If you want to check out a couple episodes ago for us on the Pop Culture Cosmos, we went into detail about the stigma of video games, and I think that was a great example of it. But you know what? Retro City Games comes out on top indeed. But once again, it is the Pop Culture Cosmos. It is Josh Peterson along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much again for watching and listening. Before we get into Fallout, before we get into Civil War, before we get into all the things that are going on in the pop culture, we want to say a special happy birthday. I know Josh and I have been called Xbox fanboys on more than one occasion, and I do. If you press to me, you say I had preferred one system over the other. Nintendo, Sony, or Xbox. I would say it's Xbox, Josh, but I will say I do want to wish a happy birthday. As I've said before, I do like my share of PlayStation games from time to time. PlayStation recently turned 30 years old. It's now 30 years for everybody. 3 decades of PlayStation. Your thoughts on what PlayStation has done to the industry in 3 decades, my friend.
Okay, so I was asked the other day by a student, would you rather play PlayStation or Xbox? And I sat there thinking to myself, I'm like, well, let's think about this. That's a loaded question, right? Because Xbox obviously has the better ecosystem, in my opinion. All right. And I yeah, D-Gen, right? Are we really that old? I got a story for you in a second. But Xbox obviously has the better ecosystem, right? But PlayStation, there's just something, if it weren't for that controller, the Xbox would be my go-to every time. You know, I love Xbox's ecosystem. I love the way all that stuff works a lot better than PlayStation. But when I'm just sitting at home wanting to play video games, the PlayStation 5 remote just feels so good.
I don't know. I can't. Same thing I will say about the Xbox Series X, which is right now in my hands, buddy boy.
So I'm not saying I'm a Sony fanboy, but I've enjoyed the PlayStation 5 in a way that I have not enjoyed the PS4 and PS3 and PS2 and all that before it. Okay, so one last story before we move on to the other stuff here. I remember specifically, remember that E3 when Sega Saturn was about to come out and then they announced the PlayStation. They're like, it's going to be at a lower price point. I remember that happening. And I was just a kid, but like I remember seeing the video and then going to Sears and seeing the PlayStation in the case, you know, because I was still buying Genesis games at the time. And I remember seeing the PlayStation like in the, in the little glass cabinets at Sears. That was back when they just had like a corner booth in the, in the Sears. But I don't know. I just remember thinking, I'm like, oh, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. So when Christmas came one year, and my dad was like, do you want a Nintendo 64 or the PlayStation? And he made the choice for me. He went out and bought me a PlayStation because the guy told him that's going to be the next big thing. And lo and behold, it was, you know, so who would have guessed? But what a time to be alive, man. What a time to be alive.
It has had its share of run. And obviously, you know, with the height of PS4 and how well it did, PlayStation 3 had its ups and downs, especially when it didn't get off to the greatest start because of the price and all that. But I will give it its props. It's come out with some great first party games, some great first person or third, I guess, basically just great singles player experiences that both Nintendo and both also as well Xbox have not had as much of. I mean, for every Mario that you've enjoyed, for every Zelda that you've enjoyed, you know, PlayStation has had its share. Final Fantasy, going into God of War, going into Uncharted, going into The Last of Us. You know, whatever you say you want as far as PlayStation, if you were a PlayStation hater, you know, be that as it may, but you cannot deny the success as far as storytelling from several of the IPs in the PlayStation library.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at the PS1 era. What was that, 97 through 99, somewhere around there? Mm-hmm. They put out so many, like, amazing RPGs from Ark the Lad, Legend of Legaia. They had the Valkyrie series. They had Xenoblade. Maybe Xenoblade is PS2, but there's just so many good, or Xenogears, sorry, and the, you know, Brave Friends from Musashi. Anyways, so many classic stories told on the PS1. And then, you know, those RPGs, I tried to do sequels on the PS2, and they were not as well received as the originals. But yes, absolutely. Like, Sony has been the place to go for RPGs for ever since they started. You know, and Xbox, remember they tried to get in that RPG market back when the original, or the 360 came out? It just didn't hit that well. Mm-hmm. Sony has definitely picked up the slack in that regard as far as, you know, good story-driven games goes, and they still do that to this very day.
So what are your thoughts on PlayStation's future? 30 years in, obviously they've done well this particular generation for whatever reasons or excuses you want to say, whether it's COVID, whether it's just not the games weren't quite up to the level of the last generation. They probably... although they still have a chance, they probably will not outsell the PS5, will not outsell the PlayStation 4. It's beginning to look like it will probably just fall just short. But then again, compared to, you know, the Xbox, you know, the Xbox ecosystem, like you say, is better, but they've not been able to translate that to a larger, broader base. Nintendo still has its own base with the Switch that nobody can argue about its success. So what do you see the future for PlayStation? Again, for me, it's still the Xbox, just because the Xbox Games Pass, I think, is the contemporary, type of system that you should use as far as, or the one I would recommend the most within the video game industry. But what do you see for the future for the PlayStation?
So anytime we talk about the future of PlayStation, I always remember that commercial with the guy holding like the silver ball in his hand and he's squeezing it and all of a sudden is projecting the game into his mind. I don't know if we'll ever get to that, you know, that kind of tech, but I don't know. I see PlayStation hanging in there. They obviously have slowed things down because they said they're not putting out any, first party titles until mid-year 2025, but they're working on some things behind the scenes, but I think we're still going to get a ton of great content coming out of them. And they are a company that truly like takes their time on their games, and every single one, like, you can tell there's a lot of thought put into the story and the way that they market it. And another big thing that PlayStation does that Xbox doesn't, there's a hyper focus on physical media. And you know me, I'm a physical media guy, but there is a hyper focus on physical media because that they are creating, supply and demand, collectability, whatever you want to say. But I don't know. I mean, I think Sony still has a strong future going in, as long as they keep, one, as long as they keep putting out these you know, these flagship titles that they have, but also like look at the back library of amazing games. Like they have a back library that Xbox could never even dream of having. So like if they were to go back and say remake Legend of Legaia or Brave Fencer or Musashi, even like that would be, that could keep the PlayStation trail going for a really, really long time. So it just depends on their marketing choices. But I mean, I don't see PlayStation fading into the night anytime soon.
Well, I'll tell you what, though, if you have thoughts on 30 years of PlayStation, obviously great memories of the past, and what's your thoughts on the future for PlayStation, we would love to hear it. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts. Well, my friend, before we hit the half hour break and catch up on what you and I have been watching on television, which includes Fallout on Amazon Prime, also as well, of course, looking at Three Body Problem on Netflix. I think you finally finished that off. And also Shogun coming into its final two episodes here. Really getting good there. But before we go ahead and get into any of that, I want to go ahead and give you an update on what's going on in the box office, my friend. Domestically, Civil War from A24, the, I don't know, I guess somewhat controversial movie that came out. I think a lot of people wanted to go, and especially in this political environment, wanted to go ahead and make it right or left. And again, the reviews have all pointed toward that it's just seeing from a different perspective than a right or left. But a hypothetical civil war in America was depicted in this film. It did take the box office. The first time an A24 movie has led the charts in North America. It also marks the biggest R-rated start of the year. It gained about $25 million in its debut. So I want to hear your thoughts, my friend. This has sparked a lot of controversy, a lot of conversation. But I want to hear your thoughts, my friend, about what's going on with Civil War, the number one movie in the U.S.
You know, I'm kind of actually like grateful that this movie has been made, because like we watch a lot of movies that come out or have come out over the past like few years. They've all been very political, and they've either leaned one side or the other. This movie is, from what I've read about, is pointing out just the flaw in having one side or the other.
It's like, supposed to be apolitical. It's supposed to see it from the view of the press.
Right. So it's like, it, I don't know, like it highlights those flaws. And I don't know, like I feel like that's such a, what's the word, meta, when it's like kind of outside the box, is out there, mm-hmm. the kids all call it. I don't know. I think it's a very uniquely done film. It's not something I'm going to be able to get out of the house to go watch. We price of movie tickets and all that, we talked about that already, but it's definitely something I'll watch, you know, when it comes out. But it, I don't know, I'm very intrigued by it ever since I saw the trailers for it. And you know, seeing, what's it, Kirsten Dunst,
yeah,
and Nancy Plymouth, you know, they're married in real life, you know, it's just I don't know, those are, they have a lot of actors that haven't been in the spotlight for a long time, but they seem to have done an amazing job with this movie.
Well, Jesse, though, he was only in one scene, just to let you know. They do depict it in the trailer. They run into him in Texas. But I don't know. If I ever interviewed, I want to ask, did he have fun shooting for whatever, 1, 2, 3 days, however short amount of time? You know, he's been on camera and film movies with his wife before, Kirsten Dunst. But I just want to, I'd love to hear just the dynamic of how it is when you're performing with your wife. But his performance was said to have been scary and a scene stealer. And I just would have loved to see, you know, if I get a chance to ever to ask him about that, just to see about his thoughts on how it was to film that and how they were off screen to each other during that process, because his wife is on the screen same time with him while he's doing that scene. So yeah, I'd love to see how that portrays, because Jesse Plemons is getting a lot of notoriety. He has been in a lot of good films as of late. So to see his performance here, obviously perpetuates that, even though it's in the cameo. But Kirsten Dunst is getting a lot of praise as well. And, you know, for leading and heading up this film, and she deserves a lot. As far as Alex Garland, the director, You know, he's done a couple of controversial films before, but Civil War, again, seeing it from a different perspective and about a hypothetical Civil War, I don't think people should try to read too much into it. I think they should just go see what it is and see. I think he just wanted to depict what could happen in a hypothetical situation if it ever denigrated to that point. I think that's what the point he was trying to get across. And I think people should just evaluate it from that standpoint.
So, you know, what's funny. I'm trying to remember, there's an episode we did a while back. And I was like, there's two directors who are going to leave their mark on cinema. And I said, it was going to be Gareth Edwards and Alex Garland. And lo and behold,
I think Denis Villeneuve would have been one of my choices.
Yeah, this was before I, like, you know, he was on my map, but, you know, this is back. I saw Gareth Edwards, his monster film, and then he went on to do Godzilla. But then Alex Garland, when we talked about Ex Machina, and we talked about Annihilation, like, I was sitting there thinking, like, these are directors that really go outside the box. It's not something you really see anymore. So, but now I feel like Alex Garland's kind of, you know, rising a little bit above Gareth Edwards. But yeah, I don't know. Like, this is it's a brand of storytelling. It's not safe storytelling, and he tells very risky stories. So it's like, it's good to see that it's, you know, it's paying off with in the box office and with viewers.
I do want to mention, though, before we hit the break, my friend, there's another movie that's upcoming that just got a ton of reviews for that's going to be upcoming, starring Zendaya, that I think is going to get, if it doesn't get enough love at the box office, will get enough notice as far as on a lot of best 10 best lists, and that's Challengers. I know a tennis movie is not for everyone, and this is a love triangle story set in the world of tennis, but it has garnered the best reviews outside of Dune. In fact, I think it's even on Metacritic ahead of Dune Part 2. And if that's the case, even though Dune Part 2 has been called by many to be the best sci-fi movie or of the year, or best sci-fi movie of the decade, or best sci-fi movie of all time, or the best sci-fi movie since Empire Strikes Back, we've heard all that. The reviews on Challengers could make it a strong contender come awards time, my friend, despite whatever it does at the box office.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I've only seen a couple trailers for it, and I think that's the one where those two guys are both in love with Zendaya and they play tennis and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it seems very unique. So is it based on a true story? Is that why it's so?
I'm not sure if it is. I'd have to do more research into that, but it's definitely, again, based off, you know, the world of pro tennis. And I know that she, during the course of the movie, gets a substantial knee or leg injury that sets her back, and then maybe her recovery, and then also how she plays against the two guys. The dynamic, I guess, there between the three is really what drives this film, Josh. And I think that a lot of people are going to be praising Zendaya's performance. I really think this should make her an early front runner for an Oscar.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Zendaya is definitely getting out there these days. So she's bound to hit Oscar gold at some point.
I agree with you, my friend. But yes, it is Challengers. It's not out as of yet, but it's been getting a ton of reviews. So if you're interested more, check it out. But it is Challengers. I understand that the theme, as far as in the world of tennis, may not excite everybody. So I have no idea how well it'll do. I think the advance word on how good the reviews are and the fact Zendaya is leading this may give it a decent chance to go ahead and make some money at the box office. But again, I'm not 100% sure, Josh. So we'll see, because, you know, with these niche subjects, like the world of tennis, doing it on that doesn't always grab a larger audience. So I'm very unsure, despite Zendaya's sensational performance, despite the terrific reviews, I'm so unsure exactly if or how well Challengers will do.
Yeah. I mean, it's a, like we always talk about, it's kind of a weird market that we're seeing in the movies these days. But I will say this, it's nice to see things coming out that are once again starting to take risks and push the franchise only line that has been set in recent cinema.
Agreed. And so I hope people support it. And I hope people will go ahead and get a chance to see it. It is Challengers, and also as well Civil War, which is also getting strong reviews. Please go ahead, support good movies out there. Support Dune Part 2 before it leaves theaters. Please let us know your thoughts on all the good movies that are out. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. But before we head to the break, my friend, any movies, are they getting you excited at this point in time of season? I know we said we're going to do a halfway point, but are any movies really getting excited you for you at this point?
Are we talking about like things coming out or things that we've watched so far?
What have you watched so far that has really stood out to you movie-wise?
Oh, that's tough, man.
For me, it's Doom Part 2, obviously, hands down. But
yeah, Doom Part 2 was good. You know, obviously, like I like the Demon Slayer movie, but that's, I don't know if you count that as a film or not.
Or as an extra episode. Yeah, extra I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Those are the only two movies I've watched that have been released this year. I have been backtracking a little bit. So I'm like halfway through Napoleon right now, and that, I mean, it's not amazing, but it's not terrible either. So I don't know. I'm trying to watch more things. I've actually been watching, you know, we'll talk about the TV streaming stuff in a minute, but I don't know, man. I don't know. I wish I had a better answer here, but yeah, I have not seen anything yet this year, whether it's from last year or this year, that I've been like, oh man, that sucks. So that's good.
Okay, that's a plus for you right there, my friend. But it is, of course, Dune Part 2 for me so far. But then again, halfway through this year, we'll go ahead and see if everything as far as the best of the best will be shaping up. We'll go ahead and make sure we provide that for you here coming up halfway through the year. But definitely looking forward to seeing what more good stuff that's out there. Civil War by A24, that's out there in theaters. And then also as well, upcoming Challengers with Zendaya. Please go ahead and support these good movies if you can. And please let us know your thoughts. We want to hear in detail your thoughts on some of the best and best out there that really moved you so far in television and movies. We would love to hear your thoughts. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com, or you could go ahead and hit us up on social media, wherever you find Pop Culture Cosmos. Before we hit some of our thoughts on what we've been watching, plus also as well, CinemaCon. Don't want to forget CinemaCon, because that was a big week for the movie industry, Josh. But before we hit to all that, what's going on at the Happy Hoarder?
Same old, same old. I'm still working on those website updates. As a teacher, I get a summer vacation. So I got that coming up here in May. So end of May. So I will get that going. Plus, I'm doing a little project for the Pop Culture Cosmos. So we'll be talking about that a little bit here soon. But yeah, Happy Horror, you check out our website. It'll be active here in a couple of weeks. We're doing Central Texas Comic Con on the 26th and 27th, I think are the dates there. So that is hopefully going to be good, and you know, just keep following us on social media. We did post a GoFundMe because we're trying to kind of clean up a little bit of a mess that happened to us last year. So if you guys get a chance, you see it, you know, don't feel like you have to donate, but if you feel like it, I'd be incredibly grateful. But anyways, yeah, I'm feeling big things going to be rolling around here for the Happy Hoarder here when the summer season approaches.
Once again, that is the Happy Hoarder. You can start off everything by Happy Hoarder on social media, and then, of course, happyhoardercollectibles.com. Please go ahead and support Josh as well if you can. It'd be greatly appreciated. He does a lot of great work for Happy Hoarder, does a lot of great things in the world of collectibles, and really would help out if you could support him at the Happy Hoarder as well.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos. Don't touch that dial. Wait, do people still use dials?
Oh, here you are. Well, that was pretty good timing. You're here and we're here.
He was just seminal to so many people.
Authentic and kind.
Teach you something and make you feel good.
Something very soothing, something very calming.
Fundamental in developing me into the human being that I am today.
You ask anybody in Canada, they know who he is.
It's hard to imagine anyone having had a bigger influence on my life.
It's the award-winning documentary, Mr. Makeup. The Magic of Make-Believe, available now on Amazon Prime Video. But my friend, there's still much more to talk about on today's program. And before we get into CinemaCon, before we get to NAB or anything like that, I won't mention too much NAB because I haven't visited the floor yet. NAB is going on as we speak right there in Las Vegas. It's a big week for Las Vegas with CinemaCon and NAB, but before we get to that, my friend, you've been catching up and I've been catching up on a lot of things, including we'll start off with the big number one show this week that debuted. That is not on Netflix. Well, unless you, yeah, that's not on Netflix right now. The big number one show that people are talking about is Fallout, based on the video game series. Fallout brought 9 episodes all at once to Amazon Prime. Your thoughts, my friend, as I know you're about halfway into it. So your thoughts on Fallout on Amazon Prime.
All right. So, you know me, you got everyone out there knows me and knows that when all these outlets and people are continually saying that this show is amazing or this movie is amazing, I'm the skeptic, right? I go in there skeptical and I think to myself, what is happening that people think that this is so amazing? What agenda is at play? Blah, blah, blah. Anyways, I watched it. First episode, I get in there, and one, Walter Goggins' character, right? That's his name, Walter Goggins, mm-hmm. The guy that plays, absolutely, hands down, amazing. The girl, I forget exactly what her name is, too, but she does a great job, too. So I got in the first episode, and I'm thinking to myself, this show has an identity crisis. It's not quite sure if it wants to be funny, if it wants to be serious, but then, like, the more I got into it and the more I watched it, I realized, like, this is typical, like, this is basically a show from the 60s with like modern modern cinematography and modern storytelling, and so it all kind of started to make sense to me, the style that they were going for, the feel of the show that they were going for. They hit a lot of things right on the head from the game, and you know, Fallout's not my favorite franchise. I do enjoy it, but it's not my favorite, so I'm not 100% on all the lore that's in there, but it feels good to watch. Like it's a video game adaptation that is like true to the game, but also you can watch it without having any history of the game. And I think that for that reason, I think is why it's getting rated so highly among fans. Like I'm enjoying it. You know, I'm on episode 4. I don't know what happens after this part, but I am gonna keep on keeping on with the story here. I'm excited to see where it's going. I think it's they're talking about renewing it for another season. A lot of talk on the web about that.
Well, first off, California has offered Amazon Prime a $25 million tax break as far as if they go ahead and film it in California. The story takes place in Los Angeles, but that tells you that they have the options, they can film it anywhere. I mean, we've seen, you know, Vancouver, we've seen, you know, Georgia, we've seen all these other places around the country that have impersonated California and New York before, and they've been able to go ahead and pull it off with enough green screening. But California has already offered Amazon $25 million tax break in order to film season 2 there, if they should be inclined to go ahead and extend it, which, you know, for $250 million, or let's just say $225 million series, that'd be getting a 10% off sale right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's, I don't know where the cheapest place to film is, but I mean, obviously, like, if California is willing to do that for them, there's there's already some good incentive to put in a season 2. But yeah, I don't, it's funny because, like, I don't know how much of that show is filmed, like, is computer animated, how much is filmed in a studio, but they did a really great job of like bringing the world to life, because you can't see anything that would hint at it not being real, you know.
Yeah, they did a great job of that. That's one of the biggest things that I like about the series. I have finished it last night, is that they recreated the environment, and as far as whatever Todd Howard had envisioned for a Fallout series, because he is one of the executive producers, he's one of the masterminds behind the Fallout video game series, they did it, and they did a great job in doing that. They have recreated the worlds, the vaults, the wastelands. They have done a great job in making this Fallout environment exactly how you would want it if you're a Fallout fan. I'm only a passive Fallout fan. I've played Fallout New Vegas as far as the most. I played the Fallout 3 and 4 a little bit. I've never really fell in love with the series. So again, like you guys out there that are big Fallout fans, I think you should appreciate exactly what you're seeing out there, because they have done a great job of recreating that environment. I think for the most part, like I said, the cast has been done outstanding. Like you said, Ella Purnell, who's Lucy McLean, who's the lead in this. I think she's done a very excellent job. I think she's done a great job. I think Emmy voters need to make her aware of her come next year when the Emmys come out. Aaron Moten, who as Maximus, as the guy forced into, you know, being part of the Brotherhood of Steel, I think gets a lot of acclaim as well. And Walter Goggins, Walton Goggins has done, as Cooper Howard does, you know, whatever they do, flashbacks or wherever they put him now in the you know, in that present time of the show, in the apocalypse, whatever he has done, he does just an outstanding job, and he deserves a lot of praise. But I think for me, the best part about the series, you know, Josh, I'm not always in love with this new style of doing shows where you have to make sure you tell every story and you split up every story into segments and you make sure every part of it is told. Like, for instance, Invincible. We just talked about Invincible. I think one of its weaknesses is because it was scattershot all over the place. I wanted to tell this story, then I tried to tell this story of this group of people, then I tried to tell this story of this group of people. Well, one of the best parts about this, and this tells me about modern storytelling in television and films, is that, okay, they are trying to give a lot of these other sub-stories, which in the past, Josh, would not gotten any time at all. They're trying to give them time and a mystery behind it. And everything is important as far as the overarch in the story as a whole. Case in point, the vault systems. And the vaults, and the vault that Lucy, are the protect, you know, the main hero of the story, she leaves the vault to go and search for her dad. That's the premise in episode one. So I'm just going to go ahead and put some light spoilers out there. But in doing so, you thought that as soon as she left that vault to go and venture into the world of Fallout, that you would leave the vaults behind, Josh. But no, the one thing I really like is that they did give time and attention to what was going and taking place in vaults 31, 32, and 33. And for the most part, Josh was able to successfully tie it in to the entire story. They didn't do 100% of that by the end of the series. I will say that they should have done a little bit more shoestring tying, but just the fact that they put characters into the forefront, Josh, that would have normally been just out in 5 or 10 minutes in other series, I think was very credible. I think was very much appreciated. And I think it made for an enjoyable series overall, Josh.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, having the concept of having the main villain of the show create this situation that causes, you know, repercussions for the vault dwellers throughout the entire series, I think was a fantastic idea, because it allows them the opportunity to keep going back, cutting back to, you know, what's going on in the vault, what's going on with Lucy's what's her name,
Lucy McLean,
is Lucy McLean's brother. I don't know, like the violence in that first episode was like shocking to me, but also I was like, oh, that's
well, they did, pretty, you know, Jonathan Nolan did Westworld. And do you remember how season one ended?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. These violent delights have violent ends, right? And they all the blood and guts everywhere. But yeah, I don't know. They made a lot of, what do you call it, unique choices with storytelling. And I think it is paying off for me so far. The, you know, what's interesting to me is I'm only halfway through the show. So, but the Lucy character and what's the knight
guy? Maximus.
Like, yeah. I'm getting
Aaron Boat.
I'm getting Ray and what's his name vibes from Star Wars.
Okay. And that, Ray and like, Finn.
Yeah. Is that
Daisy Ridley and John Boyega?
Yeah, Daisy Ridley and John Boyega. Like, I'm getting that kind of vibe from them. So I'm like, oh, okay, I can ride this train.
That was one of the better parts of the last trilogy of movies. But then again, they kind of did the
chemistry on screen was like great for those two characters.
But then they just poo-pooed that in Skywalker. But, you know, I digress on that. So
we didn't talk about that.
John Boyega, I don't think, wants to talk about it either, which is a shame, because they could have extended his character into a Star Wars series on Disney Plus, and I think it would have been a pretty good one, but they kind of ruined that one as far as for his character and for him, because he really doesn't have good things to say about it. But need I digress? It is, of course, Fallout. I do want to say that there's one thing I have an issue with as far as, because we talk about, as you go along, some of these characters have unnaturally long lives for various reasons. I'll just say that. But Josh, they don't explain one main character's reason for their longevity, and I will just say that I have an issue with. But outside of that, and outside of just not all the way tying the shoestring well, I think this was a very, very good series. It is a very strong video game adaptation. And remember, when we started the show, we were begging Hollywood to make smart, intelligent video game adaptations. We're now at that point, after we saw what we saw with The Last of Us, that Hollywood cannot turn back on making good adaptations. We even saw Halo to an extent. It was made poorly in that first season. It was a bunch of trash. But in season two, with a new showrunner in place, they realized that they do need to step it up. They didn't really do it all the way, but it was substantially better than the first season. I'll give it that. But you're seeing, Josh, now you and I have now lived to a time period where we're seeing smart, intelligent video game adaptations that are now being applied to on the screen. And as you always know, I will always finish this when you talk about video game adaptations. I'm hoping one more will be done. That's right behind
me. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we know.
Massive.
It'll happen. But
if they can spend $200 million on Fallout, they can spend $200 million on Mass Effect.
Well, I'm sure Mass Effect will be 10 times more expensive to make. But right. I think the returns will be great for them. Knowing this, though, knowing that Fallout's good, I know next they're working on the Horizon series. So that gives me
Mass Effect.
Yeah, we need a Mass Effect series. But it gives me faith in having a faithful Horizon adaptation from there. Who knows what could happen? So thank you, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, for doing something right. This is the highest rated, I think, video game adaptation we've ever seen. So that's
outside of even over The Last of Us.
Maybe Last of Us was, I don't know if that was a 9 or a 10, but yeah,
it's,
I mean, they're
close. It's close. IGN did give this a 9 for the first season, so I would say The Last of Us to me is slightly better than Fallout, but then again, Fallout, I will give them credit, they didn't play everything as close to the video game, or they couldn't play it as close to the video game as The Last of Us, which The Last of Us did mostly a beat for beat as far as the video game is concerned. So I give the Jonathan Nolan and everyone involved at Fallout a lot of credit for being able to create an original story out of a world that's not so original.
Yeah, so that I mean, that's the thing though with RPGs, like it's hard to faithfully adapt something like that into a show or a movie, because there's so much wandering off the beaten path. There's side quests to do, and a lot of it's like inventory building and things like that. So just being able to take the source material and turn it into put it on a linear path is something that I think is very impressive in itself. And honestly, like, I'm hopeful that Borderlands will do something like that, but I'm not holding my breath for that. But I don't know. It's so far, it's been a good ride for me.
So what are your thoughts out there on Fallout on Amazon Prime? Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. Well, before we get to CinemaCon and, some maybe final touches with NAB, but again, I'm still heading there tomorrow, so we'll see what happens. You caught Three Body Problem, my friend. What's your thoughts? You finally got to finish up Three Body Problem. Do you still have a problem with Three Body Problem?
All right, so I did see what you're saying about the CG. It didn't bother me that much. You know, like
it was Uncanny Valley for me.
Yeah, it stood out for sure, but I think I was more like fascinated to see like what was going to happen as a result of the scenes that showed the bad CG that I was willing to overlook it. the last episode, I know we talked about this off camera, but like the last episode, I had a problem with, because they did a great job of like character development and world building and like creating these, really examining the relationships between, you know, these friends that end up in different places in the end of the movie, or not movie, but in the end of the show. But when they got to the last episode, and this is something that happened with Game of Thrones too. I mean, was it DB Wise and I forget what the other guy's name is, but it is something that they are notorious for doing. They want so badly to hook you into another season that they just rush through all of this like cliffhanger stuff in the end of the episode. And I think the had it had a few more episodes in its first season, it could have fleshed those stories out a little more organic. But the last episode, it was far too busy and they did far too many things that didn't make sense. And that was the one down part of the series for me. Other than that, like, I think that it's, I don't know, I liked it. It's, and one, I know we talk about this a lot, but we don't get a lot of good sci-fi. And I think that this, they did a good job with this adaptation. And two, it's a very intellectual show. And I know we've been talking about how we need a little bit more of that in the world of TV, movies, streaming, etc.
DJN, just to answer your question in full, it's Last of Us, Fallout, and there's like a big cliff. Take like an Acapulco cliff dive before you would actually reach Halo or any other video game adaptation. I think that would probably be the best way. Although you could, yeah, because I guess the Mario movie, I guess you could say it was really good too. I mean, in its own way. So maybe you could say that. You
know what? Yeah, the Mario movie is great, but you know what? I actually really enjoyed the Assassin's Creed movie, and I know it's found a lot of like life on Netflix. People have been saying it's pretty cool, but I would say the Assassin's Creed movie is pretty cool too. I would put that before Halo for sure. Fallout is good. Sonic, I think, is like my favorite video game adaptation movie right now, and then I'd say probably Fallout.
Yeah, Sonic's fun. I'll give it that popcorn movie, but
Fallout and Halo's probably like at the bottom of the list right now. But it's
Halo has one episode that's good.
Yeah, it's got its hooks into me this last season. So I don't know, maybe things will change. But
well, got its hooks into me with one episode, Josh, and then it just released itself by the end of the season. So
right. I don't know. That was, again, though, that's what I'm talking about with that last episode. Let's call it a last episode culture, right? The cliffhanger culture, where they just rush all this junk and they end up showing this like really poorly planned out thing because they're like, yeah, we're going to finish it and make them want to watch more. And
it was the last four episodes, Josh. They should have just ended it on the Fall of Reach. And
I don't know. I didn't think the last few episodes were as bad as you did, but the last episode in itself of that season was pretty dang bad.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. There you have it. It is our thoughts on video game adaptations, but let us know your thoughts on Three Body Problem. Shogun, it's coming out to the final two episodes. You've got to check it out. If you've not yet, you are missing out on some of the best television this year. And also as well, any of the video game adaptations, please let us know your thoughts. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
If you're tired of sifting through flea markets for rare and unique games, we can help. Retro City Games in Henderson, Nevada, only 5 minutes from the Las Vegas Strip, has all your favorite gaming staples, classics, and a wide selection of rare games with new stuff always appearing on our shelves. Come in and chat with Nicole or Doug about your love of games and watch as they help you complete your collection or find your childhood favorite. And don't forget, Retro City Games loves trade-ins. So if you have any Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega, Xbox, PlayStation, or even PC games, come in and visit Retro City Games today. Welcome to the new metropolis of gaming, Retro City Games.
Well, before we head on out, my friend, wanted to go ahead and touch on NAB. Obviously, you go there as far as the National Association of Broadcasters. I hopefully will have a update for people later on this week when I get a chance to talk to Melinda. So hopefully we'll be able to touch on that because I do hit the show floor tomorrow. But looking forward to seeing what the world of National Association of Broadcasters brings, which brings you a lot of what's going on with the TV live behind the scenes industry and film industry behind the scenes. So hopefully we'll be able to go ahead and be able to share our thoughts on that. But before we head on out, my friend, also in Las Vegas this week was CinemaCon. You get a sneak peek at a lot of what the public doesn't get to see as far as what's coming up for the movies. And these studios, they usually ball out, as we say on the Lakers Fast Break, because they put out their best foot forward for this, my friend. So I want to hear your thoughts on this. When you heard all the news of what was going on there, going on with Disney, Paramount, Universal, Warner Brothers, all of them coming out there and showing their best things, what was the one thing, before we get into the nitty-gritty, what was the one thing that was announced or shown off at CinemaCon that made you say, man, I wish I was there?
I would say the Gladiator 2 footage.
I knew it. You were going to say that.
You know, we Ridley Scott had a lot going on at that thing. But
you were going to say that. I had it right on him on the other tab. I have it right on there on the other tab.
I know, because this has been a movie that's been talked about. When did Gladiator came out? When I was in the seventh grade. So
it's,
I mean,
2000.
Yeah. So that was a long, long time ago, and that sequel has been talked about for years and years and years. What, we're almost 20 years past the release of you said 2000, right? So yeah, we're 24, almost 25 years later, we're getting this sequel. But I don't know. I've been trying to keep up with it over the years and seeing what was going on with it, and to know that it's coming to life and to hear about that footage that was shown. Like, I cannot wait to see Ridley Scott. Like, is Ridley Scott's directing that, if I remember correctly? But yes. I can't wait to go back and see a movie from when Ridley Scott was in his prime. You know, like, that was a movie that's what he excels at, are these historical epics. So naturally I'm incredibly excited, but also reading the synopsis of it, I'm really curious about, like, how these characters ended up in these situations. And because of that, like, it's got its hooks into me, man.
Well, it reminds me, Paul Mescal taking up the lead role in this, of a younger, much younger Russell Crowe, when he was still relatively unknown, you could say, at that time, before he really stepped it up with Gladiator. And that obviously jettisoned him into another stratosphere as far as early 2000 films. And, you know, he had a wave of success in the early 2000s that very few actors can match, because, you know, again, a lot of it started with Gladiator. But I will say that I'm looking forward to seeing how, you know, Paul Mescal is utilized in this film. Pedro Pascal, he was in everything. He's in the film, so definitely
he's
looking
a bad
forward
guy,
to
it. I think, right? Him and there's what's his name from Stranger Things? What's his name? The guy that everybody loves, Eddie.
Yes, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, absolutely. So it's definitely looking forward to seeing what's going to go and take place in this film. Obviously, that was your number one. Number one for me. Well, it was Gladiator, but I'm going to have to say number one for me.
Before we fold on Gladiator, I want to hear yours, but I want to talk to you about the title. Do we want it to be called Gladiator 2 or something like Out of the Box that we know is tied to Gladiator?
Just Gladiator 2. Why make it, you know, it's 24 years old. I would just go ahead and just do Gladiator 2.
That's fair. Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Continue. Yeah, just why keep it simple in this case? If it would have been made like 3-4 years ago, Gladiator, I would say that different, obviously, but because it's still fresh. But I would just do Gladiator 2. I would probably say the keep it simple, because maybe Blade Runner 2049, that, you know, people no, just
that's
didn't.
A very fair point.
The one for me, I think I wanted to go ahead and hear about the most after Gladiator, I think, was, say, Captain America, the new Captain America film that was shown off. Obviously, Disney had a presence. Kevin Feige was there on the floor in front of the theater at CinemaCon. He was pitching hard what the Marvel Universe has set up. Also talking about Thunderbolts. Also talking about what's going on. Showed extensive look at Deadpool and Wolverine. So yes, Disney was there. Disney was really trying hard to go ahead and make sure that you knew what was coming up. So yes, Moana 2, Mufasa, The Lion King, Inside Out 2, and Alien Romulus, my friend. Alien Romulus, The director showed 10 minutes. What are your thoughts on Alien Romulus?
I'm not excited about it. Like, I will go watch it. And yeah, I see your face right now. But, like, we've talked about this before. Like, how many times are they going to show us the same stinking movie over and over again? Spaceship picks up alien, goes into somebody's chest, alien comes out, starts killing people. It's the same exact movie. Like, that, this is what, and I know I've beat this horse to death, but this is why I was excited about Prometheus, because it was telling a different type of alien story. There was substance to it, but everyone's like, yeah, I just want more alien killing people on ships and weird shower scenes, you know. Show it. I don't know, I'm ranting, I'm sorry, but like, show us something, give us some substance to these movies, man. You can't just keep doing the whole like spaceship slaughter thing over and over again.
Lionsgate had The Crow remake, Ballerina, which is the spinoff of John Wick, and Michael, which is the biopic of Michael Jackson, as the top films that they were showcasing off. Of course, we mentioned Paramount with Gladiator 2, If, the Imaginary Friends movie that's coming out with Ryan Reynolds, and A Quiet Place Day One, plus also Transformers 1, the animated movie that had Chris Hemsworth and Brian Tyree Henry there. Your thoughts, my friend, on Transformers 1?
I did not even know this was a thing till last week when I was doing some research for The Happy Hoarder, and sure. I don't think anything will live up to the 1980s classic that is Transformers the movie, but maybe this will. It's something that I'm sure parents will take their kids to go see, and it'll be a decent kids flick. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Universal had the upcoming Wicked movie, Despicable Me 4, and Twisters, and also Warner Brothers had a really good run as of late, Josh. They think they can keep it going with Furiosa, A Mad Max Saga, Joker, Folie à Deux, which the trailer we did get to see, as the public got to see, and then Beetlejuice, which we talked about on a previous episode as far as the look there, but it got more extensive look at CinemaCon. Your thoughts on what Warner Brothers showed off at CinemaCon?
So Furiosa looks cool. That one also has Chris Hemsworth in it, if I remember correctly.
With the big nose.
Yeah, that's right. I really enjoyed the last Mad Max movie to come out. So you know how I feel about prequels. Like, I'm not a huge fan of prequels, but I mean, they did a great job of like making that world cinematically beautiful.
It is George Miller doing it though.
Yeah. So I mean, I wouldn't mind going back to it. Despicable Me, I mean, those movies are funny, you know, but it's like I could take them or leave them. Beetlejuice is a film that I have not seen in a very, very long time, so I'm gonna have to go back and watch the first one before I get excited for the next one. I was incredibly surprised. I know they revealed the logo for the Superman movie, but I'm incredibly surprised that they did not show any sort of like even just like a 10 to 20 second clip of what's his name in the suit. Like, that's something I was highly expecting to see, but they, I guess, decided to play it safe and not show any of it.
We'll see what happens. Mickey 17 from the director of Parasite also was shown off, so we'll see what happens with that and also many of the other movies. But what are your thoughts on the movies shown off at CinemaCon? Let us know. popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. Well, my friend, it's been a great episode. We touched on a variety of things we've been catching up on and things we would like to see, but anything you need to drop on us before we head on out?
No, not that I can think of. I am incredibly excited about the Deadpool movie, but I know there's a bunch of Marvel stuff I got to go back and watch, you know, including Loki season 2. But I think out of everything shown, I think besides Gladiator, Deadpool's, I think, is the one I'm kind of looking forward to the most, because as we know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe doesn't just need a Band-Aid, but it needs like reconstructive surgery. And I'm hoping that Deadpool will right the ship, because if not, then I don't think anything will.
For all you Max viewers out there, please go ahead and catch Tokyo Vice season 2. It's some of the best that I've seen this year. And it ended in a way that they're not even sure that they're going to get approved for a third season. So they kind of tied a lot of the loose ends and did leave enough open for a season 3, but you get the feeling they even know that they might not get a third season. So please go ahead and support Tokyo Vice season 2 on Max. You'll be glad you did. So for Josh Peterson, this is Gerald Glassford. It's another beautiful day in paradise right here in the pop culture cosmos. We thank you for listening. And here's hoping you have yourself a great